On this episode of the Real Life Carry podcast, we have an interview with a real life golf pro. Regular listeners will know that we aren't huge fans of golf professionals. However, there are some good eggs out there, and myself and Zabo spent a couple of hours with one of our favourites, John Malinger. John was in the peninsula to play in a pro-am, and he was kind enough to set aside some time for us. We discussed his golf career, life on tour, and his involvement with the hugely successful Travis Matthews golf brand. It was a lot of fun, and I hope you enjoyed the interview as much as Zabo and I did. If you have any questions, opinions, or comments, please send them in on social media or via email, podcast@glorifieddonkey.com. Please check out the Glorified Donkey online store. With Christmas fast approaching, we've got plenty of hats and t-shirts available. In the meantime though, thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. Okay, episode 82 of the Real Life Carry podcast. This one's called Mally Wins His Own FedEx Cup. And that's because we're here with John Malinger. John, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We also have Zabo, Zeke Elliott of podcasting.
Awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's Pro-Am week up in Monterey.
Yeah, a little different Pro-Am than we're used to with the big one in the AT&T, but this one's a good format. They have all the tours combined together. So you have the Champions Tour, LPGA, Korn Ferry Tour, KFC Tour, as we call it, and the PGA Tour all competing against each other for the same purse. They play, you know, different tees to make it even, but it's a great format.
Yeah, so I met John last year at this event, and we discussed in the podcast, and we've been in touch all year, and finally we're get around to doing it.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. This is my favorite week of the year. This is my fifth major.
This is your favorite week of the year.
I don't compete anymore, but this is my major.
Nice.
Luckily enough, I won in 2010, so they bring me back. Pebble's like got a soft spot, a little soft spot in my heart.
That's nice.
Finished third here twice, so it's fun to come back up.
Well, we'll crack on because, first of all, how'd you get into golf?
Honestly, it was my brother. My brother worked at a local golf course, and I got to hit balls for free. I
was older brother.
Older brother. Yeah. He's actually here this week.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. I get to play them tomorrow.
Okay.
Back nine at Pebble, 9 o'clock off 10.
Right.
Try to slap one out there, get it in play.
Yeah, absolutely.
What kind of golfer is he?
He's a 10, 12. Okay. But, you know, he's athletic. He just, yeah, it's not really a sport.
How old were you when you started playing then?
I was about 10. And I got into it real heavy, and then I was a big baseball guy.
Okay.
And then he got this job at local golf course, and I got to hit balls for free with him. I started working in the cart barn, and I just started picking up. I got to high school. Everyone started, you know, getting a little bigger. Yeah. I was like, we're going to 90 feet. These kids have mustaches. I'm like, this isn't going to work for me. So baseball and golf same time. So I had to pick a sport.
Yeah.
I liked it because I got to kind of do my own thing. I got to pick when I practiced. Yeah. And
could you see at the time, did you think like when you said I have to pick a sport, were you thinking like this could be my profession? Like it's either I want to be a professional baseball player or maybe potentially professional golfer.
Yeah. Baseball was my number one for sure. Like, and it actually still is. Like, I coach my kids' baseball teams. It's like, that's my heart, but for some reason, I picked up golf and I really liked it. I just enjoyed the individuality of the sport.
Yeah,
being able to kind of just I don't need a coach to be like, hey, we have practice today. It was like I can just go. I would go putt and chip and like before school. Mm-hmm. So,
how quickly did you get from, you know, Johnny Hack to scratch golfer? This could.
I always had I always had good hand-eye coordination, so like I was a field player. I still am. So I picked it up pretty fast, but I didn't realize how good I was. I got to high school, then I started kind of winning some junior tournaments. Mm-hmm. Started getting along the ranks, and then I was, you know, junior year. It was like, all right, college is kind of coming at me, and I'm like, man, I can go to college for free. This is great.
You from Southern California?
I grew up in San Diego. And then I went to Long Beach State. Still live in Long Beach.
Yeah. Nice.
Tough life.
Brutal.
Yeah.
You know.
Brutal.
Roughing it.
If you hate 73 degrees every day, it's terrible.
I heard that San Diego has the most consistent weather in the world.
It's either between San Diego or Long Beach, honestly. Yeah. It's Long Beach is a little bit warmer.
Uh-huh.
But San Diego gets that little fog layer, but that's my heart. That's a spot where I grew up. And
for any listeners that don't know the geography of California, San Diego is right down at the bottom, and Long Beach just a little north. Is it between
about
LA
an hour and a half north?
Between LA and San Diego.
Yep.
Very nice.
Yeah.
You went from high school to college.
Yeah, Long Beach State. I finished with a marketing degree, and then right after college, I turned pro. Got in my car and drove out to Texas to play mini tours.
Okay. Wow. See, college golf, was that structured every day after practice? Was it part? Was it scholarship or?
It was, yeah. Wow. So I got a full ride there. My parents were super stoked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as they should be. Yeah.
But it was all good. I learned a bunch, team atmosphere kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then once you're done with college golf, it's like, all right, now what do I do?
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, I'm going to take out a credit card. I'm going to go hit the road, take my car and drive out and play some, see where my game is basically. Yeah.
How much to enter a mini tour event?
It was about $1,000 at the time.
Wow. Which mini tours were you playing?
I played the Adams Tour.
Yeah.
I played the Spanos Tour, Golden State Tour. $1,000, everyone's bunking up. Same room.
It's just a glorified pot game, really, right? Yeah,
it's a big old skins game.
Yeah.
Throw your money in, see where you are. And the first year was awful. I probably lost $20,000.
Yeah.
But I learned a lot as far as like, all right, am I close? Am I, and there was one little time where I was like, all right, I'm going to quit golf. And I was in Texas and there was an event in NorCal at a Spanish Open, like Preserve or something. So I drove from Dallas to Stockton overnight.
Right. Wow.
Ended up finishing third. Made like $6,000. I'm like, I am rich. Like I have made it.
Loaded.
I made it. So that was kind of a little kickstart. Mm-hmm. And then I had a great summer, finished second at Long Beach Open and just rolled from there.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, what other players who are well known today did you meet at that time? Was there anyone?
Along the way, honestly, a lot of the mini guys, the mini tour guys, it's super sparse that actually really made it.
Yeah, for sure.
Trying to think. Ryan Palmer.
Uh-huh.
He was one of the guys that was on that Adams Tour the same time I was. Other than that, there's honestly not that many. Yeah, until you get to Monday qualifiers and you start seeing the real players.
Uh-huh. I carried for a guy about maybe a year ago. And he did it till he was 38. 14 years of living out his car.
It's crazy, yeah. There's a lot of guys out there like that. I mean, there's a lot of plus twos, plus threes, plus fours that are really good. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's it's a different game when you get to like the PGA Tour level, right?
And that's the beauty of the sport, though. It's like, you know, I can't pay $1,000 and go shoot free throws with LeBron James.
Yeah.
But I can pay $1,000 and go play a tournament against these pros. Or even more, I can pay $10,000 and go play this pro-am and play with a PGA Tour player. There's no way I'm going to be able to go, hey, $10,000 to go hit baseballs with Derek Jeter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think that's why people relate with golf so much.
Uh-huh. How did you go from those mini tours? What's the next stage?
So I picked up a sponsor, super grateful for me, and we'll get back to this later, but he was the main guy at Travis Mathieu.
Wow.
That's how it ended up. But he had given me an opportunity. I wore his logo on my shirt. But he said, I want you to go play. I want you to just go do all the Monday qualifiers for the Nationwide Tour. And I played my way on through Mondays. So eventually I got status that way.
So you played your way onto the Nationwide Tour.
Yeah, so I think I did. They gave me this little nickname, Monday Mally. I think I got Monday Mally.
Yeah,
that's
a good one.
I think I was like 10 in a row.
Uh-huh. You qualified 10 in a row on Monday.
Yeah, either top 25 or I qualified for event.
Gotcha. Wow.
And I made like $80,000 and I kept my card.
There's a lot of people think that Monday qualifiers should be televised. There's a whole host of people on Twitter. They want Monday qualifiers because it's so competitive.
Yeah, big time. And to be honest, like and that's not even my game. I'm super steady. I'm just like a down the fairway green guy. And that one's like flag hunting 7 under, maybe playoff now.
Yeah, you kind of have to, right? I mean, you have a chance. Yeah.
I saw one that was 9 guys in a playoff. Crazy. That's mental.
It's just, you know, it's so deep now. And it all comes back to that same stuff where everyone does have a chance in this sport compared to others.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, bit of background there. The Nationwide was then the web.com.
Nationwide first. Then web.
Web.
Korn Ferry.
Then KFC.
Mm-hmm.
We call it the KFC.
Love that.
Yeah. Now, where was the Nike tour then?
That was pre.
So that was pre-Nationwide.
That was like the first, right?
That was back in the day.
That's the one my guy was trying to go on that I carried for.
Oh, really?
And I think he played a few events, but yeah, he's 14 years, he was living out his car. That's rough.
That's the hard part about, you know, it's there's such a like realistic part in your life with golf. You know, you have this great player, this local player that shoots 200 in his golf course every day and he thinks he can make it.
Yeah.
Yes. Unfortunately, when you get out there and it's tournament time and you're under the gun, it's just a different deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Put a card in someone's hand and
it's crazy. Yeah. Crazy different.
They melt like a popsicle.
Yeah.
100%.
And you go from Nationwide, right? How many years did you play in that?
I played 2, and then in 06, I went to qualifying school for the 3rd year. I got my card, and that was when they did 6 rounds at PJ West, La Quinta.
Oh, yeah.
So it was right down the street from me. I'm not a Florida guy, so every time I got to finals there, I didn't do well. I came back home. I think I finished 12th, so I had a pretty good number as far as like numbers are huge when you get out on the tour as far as when you're a rookie, like your status as far as what tournament you get in So I had a good start. My change in everything was here. It was at Pebble.
Yeah.
2007, I finished 3rd.
Yeah.
I was in the second and last group with Davis Love and Corey Pavin.
Okay. Did Corey Pavin still have a tash or had he shaved off?
This guy, and this guy is so underrated. You got to appreciate this guy's golf, you know. I'll never forget this. So Phil's leading. He's behind us. And we get up on number 5, par 5, 195 yards. Davis Love hits first, just smokes his 6-iron in the air like a pitching wedge. I'm next. I hit this like little cut, little 5-iron in there, bouncing up the front, and then Corey Pavin gets up there, little niblet hybrid, peels it in there, 15 feet inside all of us, and I'm like, it's so impressive to watch like every different part of everyone's game, and That really kind of settled me in as far as like, all right, I can actually play the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Who, growing up, what players did you look up to?
Big time. John Cook was a huge mentor of mine.
John Cook, guy, California boy, isn't he?
Yeah. Palos Verde guy. And Fred Couples. Yeah. Great story about Fred. So,
go on.
It's like 2000, maybe 10, my 3rd year on tour. And he was the captain, President's Cup team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm out in San Diego with my family, down in San Diego having drinks,
mm-hmm.
running to Fred. I'm like, what are you doing here? He's like, I'm getting fitting for all the President's Cup guys, like all the tailoring and everything. And the next day is Easter. And so he pulls my brother aside and he's like, hey, what are you guys doing tomorrow? I'm like, well, we have family Easter. He's like, I'm coming over.
He invited himself to Easter dinner?
I'm coming over. Okay. And my brother's like, You're not fucking coming over. Like, it's fucking Easter. Like, you're not coming over. I'm coming over. But don't tell John. So, next morning, get up. Joe pulls me. He's like, hey, by the way, I think Fred's coming over for Easter. I'm like, okay, cool. So, we tell my mom. My mom's freaking out.
She a big Fred Couples fan?
Big time.
Okay, good.
So, my dad traveled a lot, and we had this life-size poster of Fred Couples in our house.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, she's a big fan. And she's like, John, people like that, they don't come to our house.
Yeah.
10:30, Fred shows up.
Boom. Boom, boom.
That's awesome.
The boom, boom Freddy's at my house. Awesome. He's playing catch with the kids.
That's awesome.
Stays the whole day. My mom is like, literally That's started classic. Crying.
So, yeah. I love that. Who were you? Who did you look up to growing up?
Who did I look up to?
Yeah, who are your favorite golfers?
Oh, God. I mean, Jack Nicklaus, obviously.
Really?
Yeah.
How old are you?
I'm 40. I'm almost 40.
Really? Oh, yeah. Okay.
The bear.
Yeah. I go. We've got the bear here.
Yeah. The bear. Yeah. The how about yourself? Was it Seve?
Nobody. I quite like Faldo.
Really? Oh, Monty. You're a big Monty fan.
I kind of liked Monty until I got to know him. I realized he was
come,
a dick.
How come Faldo never won in the States? Like he should have.
I think he probably was, at the time, the European tour was more competitive and they spent more time over there than they would now. So if you look at the top players, the European players now, they'll spend most of their year here. They'll go over there and do the 7-8 tournaments. And the whole infrastructure is different, isn't it? I don't know. I know Faldo probably never struggled for money, but the whole infrastructure, the team behind them, he was probably still having to book into hotels and deal with a lot of nonsense. He probably wasn't flying private jets. Yeah. He was probably still getting the British Airways, you know, into Orlando and having to jump in a, you know, a bus or something. I don't know. But I don't know.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised at that because obviously six-time major winner.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the big one was Monty.
Could have
done better over here.
It's weird. It's weird how that works. It's a comfort zone as far as
massive comfort
where you are, what you're eating, where you're staying, like the people around you.
Sure.
Like Monty never won in the States.
He never embraced.
That's incredible.
That is incredible. Yeah, if you think about it, how good he is. Yeah.
But boys, he never embraced the fans. So, they would always have a go at him for having a big pair of boobs. And he didn't have a laugh with them. The American crowd.
You got to embrace it.
You got to embrace it. Yeah, and all of a sudden, he would have become a favorite, and I guarantee you would have started winning.
100%.
But he starts, you know, the petted lip, all of a sudden, he's enemy number one.
I got a great Monty story. So I'm playing US Open at San Diego, Torrey.
Okay.
And I got all my boys there, and they're fired up. They're liquored up, right?
Is this 08 or is this?
This is, this is 8. Yeah. Okay. So we're coming up to par 3, maybe number 8, I think it is. 9? 8.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 180 yards, right? And I'm playing with them.
Oh, you're playing with them?
I'm playing with them.
Okay.
Okay. I hit my tee shot, front right bunker. He hits it on the green. All my boys are just fired up in the stands, right? All of a sudden, they start chanting Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh, no.
And he is flustered.
Oh yes.
Fuck.
Yeah.
He's
yes.
done. He's done. I was like, oh, my. I'm like trying to look over. Like, guys, hey, give it a little. And I'm like, it's so good. I mean.
So Mally got it up and down and Monty 3-jacked.
Oh, yeah. And he 3-jacked. Yeah. Tide's turn.
I think, what was it, 1992 US Open, mm-hmm. when Tom Kite won it.
Tom Kite.
Right. He was
Froggy.
Wind picked up and all of a sudden shot level par.
Froggy.
That would have been the start for Monty.
The froggy glasses.
That's right.
It. Yeah. Yeah. It's a good look.
Great look. Good look for him, yeah.
Great look.
When you played Nationwide, tell us some of the most obscure places you went to.
Oh, man.
Because you must have gone to...
Well, you know, you're hitting every city in America that no one really hears about. So, like, you're going to Wichita, Kansas. You're going Omaha. You're going... These great little cities that they have, like, some of the best fans, actually, because they don't get that big population as far as, like, big cities sports. Wichita sticks in my head as far as, like, just out of nowhere golf tournament.
And were you staying, like, were there some pretty ropey golf courses? Pretty shite courses, or
I mean, we're red roofing. We're staying at Holiday Inns. We're trying to figure it out.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
2 years in the Nationwide. Then what? You get your big break in the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I got my card in 7. The 6 rounds at La Quinta.
Yeah, what's that like? 6 rounds of qualifying. That's brutal.
I actually went through the whole process. So I went through first stage. I won first stage. Second stage, I finished 5th, and then I finished 3rd in finals.
Oh, you finished 3rd in the finals in the 6th round final?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, 13th, sorry.
13th. And did that gets you full status, right?
Yeah, I was full status. So I was in a bind. I was actually sitting in Miami at a Nationwide event, and I had to either play that event or go to first stage of qualifying.
Wow.
So I pulled out, went to first stage, made it through the whole thing. 2007. Almost got Rookie of the Year. I was right there at 3/3
Wow, three-thirds in your rookie year.
Yeah,
wow.
I made like 1.8. Snedeker won the last event, kind of topped it off. He was the only rookie that won that year. It was basically me, Anthony Kim, and him.
Wow, yeah. Anthony Kim, geez.
Baller.
Anthony Kim. Now, baller. A lot of people won't know who he is, but he took out an insurance policy on his health or something.
That's the rumor, right? Is that actually, do you know that for a fact?
I do know that. He did. He got a nice chunk, but it sounds like he might be coming back. It sounds like a company might be buying out his policy so he can play. Wow.
I was going to say the statute meant he couldn't touch a golf club for a certain period of time.
As far as talent wise,
oh, brilliant.
He's a real deal.
He's in the top five ever seen.
Yeah.
He's up there with Sergio. You're talking like when you go on the range and you hear a different sound.
Yeah.
It's Anthony Kim. It's Sergio. It's Tiger. Davis Love had that. There's this sound. It's the middle.
You've never been in the range, myself and Zabo.
You hear some sounds for sure.
A little turf.
Did you ever play with Tiger?
I played a lot with Tiger on the side. I didn't play with Tiger in tournaments.
Okay. Does he like to gamble?
Not too much.
No.
But fuck, he is confident.
And he's pretty good.
I mean, I think Tiger gets a bad rap, man. I think everybody on the PGA Tour for the last 20 years should be sending him bottles of wine every year.
Mm-hmm. I've said that before on this podcast.
This guy created our sport.
Exactly.
I came out in 7. He came out in 96. And it was $300,000 for a win.
Mm-hmm.
In 07, or I'm sorry, 97, it was $900. He tripled purses.
Mm-hmm.
He created an atmosphere of a real sport.
Mm-hmm.
He changed everyone's life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan, but I don't deny that that's definitely, there's a number of things that came together at that point. Probably the corporate interest in golf as well.
Well, you have a black athlete that's not in a black sport,
mm-hmm.
and that is dominating with charisma and heart and determination that you hadn't seen since a Nicklaus.
Exactly,
Or a Palmer.
Do you think he'll ever be back?
I think I'll play again. I hope so. I mean, it's not... I'm a Tiger fan. I watch Tiger Woods at the Masters. Like, I have my buddies over, we watch it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is the guy I used to, like, compete against.
Do you know, it's a wee bit like Manchester United. I hate Man United, but I'll watch them.
You gotta respect what they're doing.
I said at the time of when he had his accident, I didn't think he'd be back because they dumbed down how bad it was. And chat is that he will not come back unless he's competitive.
I believe that.
It's gonna be interesting. We'll see. Do you think he'll ever play Champions Tour?
No.
Think he'll play soon? No.
I don't think so. I mean, you're seeing what Phil's doing right now. He's played 7 events and won 5, I think.
Yeah.
It's like,
if he does come for that, he completely changes that
he
could, tour. Yeah. That tour blows up tenfold.
Yeah.
Big time. He's too competitive for that, I think.
Uh-huh.
It's not a knock on that tour, but, 3 days, no cut. Some guys are riding carts. Like, he's cutthroat.
Why would he do that?
Yeah.
At that point.
That, honestly, career. That sounds really appealing to me, actually.
Yeah, cart.
I mean, that's right up my alley. I'm looking forward to that in 7 years.
For sure. Yeah. 4 rounds, no pro am.
Can't get here fast enough.
See, when you were doing all the qualifying in tour school, did you carry your own bag? Do you have a caddy?
I had Mac McCauley.
You had Mac McCauley.
Local Pebble Beach caddy, Mac McCauley.
Legend.
I had the Mac Attack.
The Mac Attack?
He is a legend out here.
How many, 10, 12 your career? How would you...
Yeah, I probably, but yeah, 12 years is probably fair.
How many different caddies did you have?
About 5. And Mackie lasted about 5 or 6 years.
Wow.
Lasted. I love that.
Five or six years. There's
a battle out there, man. Right. Hey.
There's got to be one good Mac story.
I'm all going to say is I work with him twice a month.
Yeah.
That's how long he lasts with me. 5, 6 years. Yeah. Tell us some good caddy stories.
My greatest Mac story.
Yeah.
So I'm in Arkansas and I'm Monday qualifying. and I'm in a playoff. I get to the final playoff, but it's dark, so we go there the next day. He's like, I can't do this. The next tournament's in West Virginia, so he's driving. He's in his van. He's pot committed to driving everywhere I'm going. He's like, pro.
He's not going to caddy for you for the remainder of the playoff?
No, because it's the next morning. He's like, pro, I got to get to West Virginia. You can do this by yourself. I'm like, okay, I got this. I got it, okay? So I show up the next morning. I get through. I'm like, all right, Mac, we're in. We're going to West Virginia. He's like, I'm halfway there, pro. Along the drive, he was trying to figure out what was going on, like as far as like, where am I going to stay, blah, blah, you know, like, we hung up the phone. He threw his phone on the dash, but what he didn't realize was it was still on.
Oh, no. Uh-oh.
So this is all recording on my messages. This is for my voicemail. So I get this message. F you, pro. I worked my ass off.
Yes.
What are you doing to me? I don't know where to go. I don't know where to stay. I don't know what to do. I've been working my butt off for you.
Oh, man.
And I replayed it for him. He's like, oh, man, I'm so sorry, Mally. But
ouch.
Awesome. It was a classic time. It was like perfect Mac. He like cares so much about everything. And he cared so much about me and my family.
Yeah.
He did an amazing job. We had a great run.
He's such a character.
He is a character.
That's an understatement.
And was he on your bag for, you won on tour, correct?
I didn't win on tour. I lost in a playoff, finished second at the Hope, third at the Players. I think I had 9 thirds or something. Never won.
Gotcha. Wow.
But my first year when I finished third at Pebble here, he was in the bag. And I remember him. I tapped in the last hole and I saw him just kind of sit there, take his hat off and just kind of look around and like,
he's
like, man, this was really cool. Thank you.
That's awesome. Is that where, did you meet him out here?
I actually met him. I was going to Canadian Tour qualifying.
Gotcha.
And Bobby Brown, who's Dustin Johnson's caddy.
Former caddy out here as well.
Yep. Recommended bringing him to me. So he caddied for me for the Can Tour.
Gotcha.
And we got through there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Me and Pete Tomasulo won that event.
Who?
Pete Tomasulo.
Never heard of him.
Played on tour.
Pete Tomasulo.
1 year.
Wow.
Maybe two. But Bobby Brown caddied for him.
Yeah.
And then Mackie caddied for me.
How did it end up with your caddies? Like, how did you go from one to the other?
Like, you know, it's like a girlfriend. Yeah. It's like you have that relationship. You're with them so much. Yeah. And sometimes you just kind of need to change it up. It was kind of, you know, the last straw with Mackie. It was like, we're in Syracuse. I'm in fifth place and it's pissing rain and we got no umbrella. I'm like, all right, dude, Nate.
Oh, snap. Yeah. That's how I get sacked.
Maybe it's, oh, sorry, pro, it's in my van. I'm like, I know, but
man,
we finished third. You got to,
I get sacked because I had all listeners, anyone that listens to this long term will know I was in Madeira. A really bad shoulder. You have a bad shoulder. Bad shoulder. I'm carrying this big bag and I look through the bag and I'm trying to lighten it. Anything, any half an ounce here, half a pound there. And I thought there were. I said, hey, listen, do you mind if I leave one of the jackets behind? We get two jackets. I don't know why I would think there was two jackets, right? But again, I was kind of new, you know, carrying for professionals. Sure, leave it. So I leave it behind. We're playing early, late Friday, going to miss the cut. Baltic, the wind's coming across, 30 mile an hour. It's 6:30 at night, 7 o'clock, it's Baltic. Get me my fucking jacket.
Mm-hmm.
I go across. And there's a pair of rain pants.
Uh-oh.
I'm going, oh, it wasn't two rain jackets. So I dumped the jacket. And at that point there, I was like, oh. So similar type thing, but do you know the umbrella?
That was just kind of the final straw. Like,
it builds up.
It was a great run. It was 5-6 years. And he went through the whole ranks with me as far as from the bottom to the top.
Yeah.
And he saw it all.
You know, from your side of things, everyone's different. What are you looking for from a caddy, though?
I mean, when I was playing, I just needed someone. I like I said earlier, I'm a field player, so I need a response as far as like, what do you think this is playing? I'll pull the club.
Gotcha.
Because I can hit a 4-iron 190 or 210 based on the direction of the wind or how I'm hitting it or holding it, draw. So it's just confirmation. I read all my putts. I needed someone that was prepared on time and believed in me.
So always you read your putts? Like through every caddy you had, you never called in a caddy for advice?
I didn't unless I was very confused. Like,
gotcha,
and,
wow.
And putting was a strong point in my game, so gotcha. I always felt very comfortable there. Yeah. It was more just like, hey, what do you think this shot's playing? And then I'm going to pull the club.
Yeah.
I hated the fact when... I hate seeing when like caddies pull clubs for people because... especially AMs, because their 5-iron can go 140 or 190. Yeah.
It's funny you say that, because I was talking earlier this year in a pod. I actually caddied for Kevin Streelman in the AT&T this year, and you know, I've been with him for 5 years caddying for the amateur partner, but this year there was no amateur, so he asked me to caddy for him, and we're in the practice round of the week, and you know, he would always ask me, what's it playing? And then, you know, the first couple of days, I'm like, oh yeah, let's pull your 8-iron. He's like, oh, just so you know, I'll pull all the clubs. You just tell me what you think it's playing, and I'll take it from there. You know,
oh,
like,
you
all
know,
right, get it.
This is where, honestly, caddying the way we caddy, and then
we're so used to
probably
doing that.
Yeah. For me, I'd be horrible in tour now. I'd be horrible.
I hear you,
because I would find it so tough because you're so in control. Because we meet, you know, I always say it, Johnny Hack on the first tee, they probably hit two balls because the first one goes out of play, or they duff it. They play their next shot, and they say, you say 165, and they go 7-iron.
They want like, they want confirmation.
You're like,
that makes them feel good.
Exactly.
I've never seen you hit a ball. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then you get blamed. You go, whoa! I've seen you hit 3 golf balls now.
Yeah. I'm not telling you where you hit. This is.
But yeah, you're right. In tour,
but part of your job is not being defensive. Unfortunately, you got to kind of take it on the chin sometimes.
We do. Oh, we do.
Well, honestly,
depending on what caddy you have.
Exactly.
Some guys are very defensive.
Yeah. The big problem for the tour caddies now is that there's, you know, a queue a mile long to take that job.
It's tough.
The whole way, just like you're talking about playing in tour, because my information is that the amount of money that's going to be in the KFC tour going forward is almost doubling, tripling.
It's $1 million per tournament now.
There purse. You go.
Not
purse.
No, not
the purse.
Purse.
The purse, yeah. So you're talking $250,000-$300,000 and win.
Yeah, that's a different ballgame.
So big time.
That's almost doubled, tripled.
You can actually have a living.
Yeah.
You can make a living. So that's the difference between, you know, in the pro game, well, the caddies is exactly the same. You know what I mean? So nobody wanted to carry a golf bag in 1992 on the European Tour or the PGA Tour. Well, probably in the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Maybe with Corey Pavin. He'd take his bag.
God, he had that friggin' nice little cut slider hybrid from 170.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it was crazy to watch him play, wasn't it?
I mean, if I ever think of Corey Pavin, I just think of his tash.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It is a thing of beauty.
The VAS irons. Remember those purple offset things?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Fuck, that's...
Is that how you
fucking
pronounce
club
it?
Sat like 4 feet behind the fucking hosel.
Yeah. Did he play those?
He won the US Open with that.
He won the Open with those clubs?
Yes.
Man, those things
the
were
VAS.
Ugly.
I used to carry for people.
The Vaz.
When I first started carrying every single person that had those.
You're that guy. Yeah, when you saw that, you're that
guy. They're like, well, Corey Pavin won a major.
Yep.
Yeah, I was the guy
Olympic
with the Sonar Tech hybrid.
What do you
after
win, Olympic?
Ben Curtis won the British.
Oh, that's too much information.
I think he won the Olympic.
Oh, you got me.
I think he hit like a hybrid in the 18 Olympic.
Wow.
So, pro career, PGA Tour, how did you feel when you got in there? Like, how did you celebrate?
Honestly, like, it's funny because that time, 2007. Qualify La Quinta, and then the next morning you have orientation about how to be on the PGA Tour. You have talk about media, you have how to kind of deal with going forward as a professional, you know, and then we're all 26-year-old kids like, F this, we're going to party. Like, everyone is hungover. Everybody.
Hell yeah.
Me, Steve Marino. Steve Marino's here this week. I haven't seen him in years. Anthony, all these guys, like So we're sitting there and they're talking about, like, you know, that was even the time of social media. Now it's like a full process of like how to deal with your image and your life and how to navigate.
I bet you're glad you're no longer part of that.
No, that's terrible to me.
Yeah.
Do you know, that's why you're the first professional golfer I think we've ever had in this, because I wouldn't want a current day top 50, top 100, top 500 golfer in the world on this, because they can't say what they feel.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're all basically corporate.
It's you know what? It's tough these days. It's tough to say a lot of things that you want and you can't.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things you want to do on Twitter or Instagram or whatever the case is that you really feel and how you really feel, but you can't. And just because of your sponsors and unfortunately, the people will take these stories and twist them.
Well, you look at McIlroy this week, he's talking about climate change.
Was he?
There's obviously
flying
a movement.
Private back from China by himself.
Oh,
and
he feels
thinking
about so bad
the
about
gas
it.
He's burning.
Just going,
oh, he feels bad about it?
Yeah.
Oh, he's only that's good. He's talking about
he
it.
He only feels bad about it because all of a sudden he sponsors and he spotlights on him to then talk about it. Jeez. You know, he doesn't care less.
Pitiful.
You know, do me a favor. You know, so how many tour events did you play?
I think I played about 200.
Uh-huh. Yeah. On the PGA Tour?
Yeah. So the key number, there's two key numbers on the PGA Tour. Mm-hmm. You need to play 5 straight years to get vested for your pension, or you need 150 cuts.
Nice.
I didn't get to 150 cuts, but I did get my pension, which is it's just a comfort thing. You know, you get retirement 45 and 55 with the FedEx Cup. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm thinking about like just over 100 in cuts. But honestly, I had so much fun. I don't regret anything I did.
What was the best part about being tour?
Oh, just the camaraderie, the guys.
Yeah.
That like just hanging in the locker room. You know, back in the day when I was younger, I loved the prep. I love getting ready for an event. Now that's the worst part. You know, I still miss competing big time. Mm-hmm. And I miss the guys. I miss.
Well, it was, as you say, it was before social media, so you could enjoy having a shower together and nobody would worry about it, you know?
You can do whatever you wanted. Like,
what would be the worst things, though?
The worst? I mean, I was 27. I had a girlfriend who is now my wife, but there was no worst thing. I'm going to all these major cities. I show up. I have a BMW or something waiting for me. I'm staying in the best hotel in Chicago or New Orleans or all the major cities, New York, LA. So you get to, and when you're there, they treat you like royal because like they're trying to show off their city for you, you know? And so you get the best meals. It's the greatest job in the world. Unfortunately, like now I see it as not the greatest job in the world. I have 2 kids. I got 2 boys that I'm raising that I want to be part of their life. And I know if I was still competing, that would not happen.
Did you have your kids when you were off tour? Or were you still on tour when you had your kids?
I had my first kid, and he was about 3, and then I stopped.
Wow.
Yeah. So I lived that, and it wasn't for me. I didn't understand how to be a dad and be a golfer.
Yeah, for sure.
For me, I have to be super selfish and I have to quit everything. I have to be like, hey, I'm going to practice. I'm going to get a massage. I'm going to train. I'll be home at 7. And the missus is like, okay, like I'm in. But to me, I'm like, I'm not being a dad. So there was a fine line in my life where I had to kind of sit back and be like, okay, what's important? Where am I financially? Where am I in my life? What do I want to show my kids?
Yeah.
And that's where Travis Matthew came along.
Yes. So I've heard different stories along the way. Again, tell us about Travis Matthews. It's a brand of clothing.
Yeah. It was something that I was a part of my rookie year on tour.
So Travis Matthew is a guy.
He was my roommate.
He was
your roommate.
Travis Matthew Johnson.
Yeah, yeah.
Played golf at UCLA. All-American. Stud.
Good player.
Great player. Did not make it as far as the pro rankings. Yeah. And once he decided to stop, he's like, I want to get into the apparel business. So he started making designs. He started making these logos, these ideas. I was one of the guys that helped with the fundraising side. Yeah. And then Callaway bought us 3 years ago.
So you had from the inception of the company, you had a good piece of the company.
Yeah, I was one of the founders.
So there you go. Nice. Yeah. So that's a fascinating story.
There was five of us.
Yeah.
That's huge. So that's why we're talking about, you know, Marley wins the FedEx, his own FedEx.
That was his own FedEx that helped him retire early, correct?
So, yeah, I won my own FedEx and then a couple more tournaments.
So tell me how... So he starts coming just drawing designs.
He started drawing designs. He made this logo, this TM. And I was sitting in my living room with him, and he's like, "Which one do you like?" We're going through the whole thing. He's like, "Let's do this one."
Wow,
this is it.
Yeah. Did he design the clothing as well, all the lines? And all
yeah. That? So then at that point, we had an idea. I had brought my original sponsor in that was sponsoring me for golf.
Nice.
He decided to fund it.
Wow.
Originally. Mm-hmm. And then after 1 year, once it started rolling, then I had invested in myself.
Nice.
Yeah. Wow. I was a massive gamble for me. Yeah. It was after my first year on tour. I had a great year. I made a couple million bucks.
Yeah.
But, you know, I put $400,000 in this company.
Wow. That's
which was
huge.
A lot of my money.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huge. Yeah, yeah.
It's a big risk, but paid off.
Yeah, it did.
And a lot of people did a lot of great things along the way. It was actually super fun to be part of, because on my off weeks, I got to go into the business meetings and I was on the board. I got to see like
how it broke down.
I was a big part of the players because the access as far as, you know, getting to these guys without agents. Yes. And I was a big part of feedback as far as material and how it worked at Pebble Beach and in New Orleans when it's 95 and humid.
Yeah.
So that was my job, was just basically, all right, get us the right team, get the right guys that it fits well and it looks good and that we can talk to.
Yeah. So from the inception of the idea, sorry, to actually making the first garment, how long did that take?
Two years. There was a lot of samples.
Yeah, a lot of samples.
A lot of samples.
Then Callaway bought it, what you're saying, 3 years ago, 2018? Yeah,
I think so, yeah.
And are you still involved in it at all with Callaway? Do you still consult with them?
I'm not involved. I stayed on for about a year just to help as far as when they transitioned, but I have no non-compete or anything like that. But I did like a little photo shoot last week with Quater, who... They do the shoes and the belts and the gloves for them now.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, so you're free to start your own.
It's a.
We thinking
it's
like a, Johnny Malley or something?
It's
we
a get possibility. A yeah.
Always thinking glorified donkey, you know?
Oh, there you go. Incorporate
both.
You
know? It's been in the talk for sure.
Cool. So,
do you still talk to Travis?
I don't talk to Travis. Unfortunately, it didn't end very well.
Oh, okay.
I've heard that.
After about him, 3 years. We had to make a decision as a company. We needed more funds, so we had to go invest more money. We had to go just fundraise, and everyone got diminished in their percentage. And at that time, he had it in his mind that he would never go below a certain percentage, and so he opted out. And we bought him out.
Okay.
Yeah. So you bought him out before Callaway bought you guys. We bought him out before the real payday happened.
After 3 years, and we were at 15 years. So,
gotcha. Oh, so, wow. He was out a while ago.
He was out, yeah.
That's amazing.
Unfortunately,
Stelly's name's on there.
Yeah.
Wow.
His name is Travis. So,
yeah,
there was a lot of legal issues.
I can imagine.
He can't use that name anymore as far as.
Oh, no!
What?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It got worse than it should have, but unfortunately, when you have that much money involved and you have.
Yeah,
when you're growing, and it was a business decision that separated us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
It happens.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, hey, listen, he'd be a great guest.
Big time.
Yeah. Okay, so we covered that, the Travis Matthew connection. You still wear the gear?
I do. I love it. It's you know, we try to create a lifestyle brand. our whole goal was, all right, let's make some clothes and then let's wear those clothes at the bar afterwards and not feel like you're a golfer. That was our whole concept.
Yeah.
And, you know, it turned into backpacks and coolers and it just turned into a whole lifestyle that it was really cool to see. And a lot of these things that they were presenting me, I was like, this is never going to work ever. And they crushed it. Yeah.
Well, listeners can also check out the Glorified Donkey website and check out the online store.
Absolutely.
Because it's a lifestyle.
It is a lifestyle.
I wanted to ask you, that you ever worn white pants? White trousers?
I did wear white pants back in the day. That was that was the time, though. 2007, 8, 9, 10.
Because there's still punters wearing them tonight.
Hey, really? But that was the style back then with the big belt buckle.
Uh-huh. Oh, God.
That was it. Do I own anymore? No.
No.
It's been about 10 years.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you ever shit yourself in the golf course?
Shit myself.
Yeah.
No, but I got a great story about this.
Everybody does.
Always leads to it. I love this question. Yeah.
I'm playing Riviera.
Uh-huh.
I'm playing Lee Westwood.
Okay. Oh, he likes white pants.
Yep, he sure does. Great dude, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
Likes to party a little bit. And I'm on the 7th hole at Riviera, and I'm like,
not a good feeling.
Something's not feeling very good right now, right? I'm like, fuck, there's no shitter around. Where do I go? I got to go back to 6, or I got to go to the clubhouse. To the day, we still laugh about it. I hit my tee shot at 9. I freaking sprinted up there, slapped a 6-iron up there, just got my par or whatever. And I'm like, dude, I'm out of here. Give me 15 minutes. If I'm late, you guys just play.
Yeah. Catch up with you later.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we still talk about it. I ran into Vegas the other day, and classic.
That's beautiful. Vegas, what's the connection with Vegas?
Nothing. I ran into him.
You just go there.
Yeah, I was living there for 4 years when I was playing, just tax purposes. And I still had a condo in Long Beach, so I was going back and forth.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
How many hole-in-ones you had?
13.
13.
13.
Greedy. Wow.
What a greedy bastard.
Any out here on this resort?
Nothing here. Two on tour. Won a car.
Wow. Where did you win the car?
Reno.
What kind of car?
Lexus.
Nice. You still have it or do you sell it right away?
I sold it.
Right away?
Yeah. Got a little ESPN click there, a little top 3.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice.
Nice.
Sweet.
That's
awesome. Top 10.
They took the insurance out.
Yeah.
Got to take the insurance.
Yeah.
Well, there's tour pros involved. You better take the insurance involved.
Myself and Zabo have had zero between us.
Zero.
Zero.
You guys got goosed.
Well, we don't
play a lot
of golf.
I don't like to be greedy. You know, I put it so close. I prefer making birdies.
Yeah.
Now, as you know, because you do listen to the podcast, we have a feature called the Bell End of the Week. Zabo, what do you think? You wanted to ask.
I'm curious about all sorts of tour players. Like, how do you feel about, let's just throw names out there, Patrick Reed. What are your thoughts on P. Reed?
You know what? Personally, I don't know him well enough to say anything about it. I love the fact that he is an American player. I love the fact he loves the Ryder Cup and he wants to beat Europe. Like, I love that part.
Yeah.
He's obviously not well liked. Here's the thing. A lot of people don't understand. When you're a golfer, you have to be selfish. You have to do everything for yourself. You're not trying to make friends. You're not trying to, you know, some guys have that, like Billy Andre ran over last night.
Yeah.
That's the guy that can actually play golf and talk and chat on the tee.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the opposite. I'm like, he always thought I was so mad. I'm like, I'm not mad. I'm just concentrating what I'm doing. When you get nervous, you talk. That makes you comfortable.
Yeah.
When I get nervous, I get quiet. Patrick Reed is just, that's just him. Like, he doesn't have friends. He doesn't need friends. He doesn't want friends. That's just how he plays golf.
My contention with him, though, is the fact that he cheats and he gets caught at it and he's unapologetic about it. I mean, there's numerous instances of him clearly cheating on television.
I've done YouTube videos on
him. And the golf commentators won't call him out on it. It seems that nobody's calling him out on it except people, you know, on the internet. And us in this podcast. I mean, the guy's actively cheating almost every year. And I mean, you can see it on television.
The one at Torrey Pines in January was horrendous.
Oh, where the ball was embedded, it bounced. Right. Oh yeah, I saw it bounce. Yeah,
I did. Mean, unfortunately, it all comes back to that's why guys don't like him in the locker room. Like, they just don't. They respect him for his game and his. But in the end, let's be honest, he's probably got three friends out there. There's 150 players.
His caddy, his bubble wife,
is one of them.
Yeah.
Who, sorry?
Caddy, wife. Oh, that, yeah. Question mark.
Yeah.
Bubba, maybe.
We call it the Bubba Watson Bell End of the Week because he is, you know, a bit of a bell end.
We feel so. How do you feel about Bubba?
I got mixed emotions about Bubba. So the one positive about Bubba was we did sign Bubba for Travis Mathieu.
Oh, did you? Okay. He's a great guy. I love Bubba Watson.
I love Bubba.
So
I love Bubba.
Pretty funny story. He did put us on the map. He won the Masters. Yeah, he hit that one shot out of the pine tree with the pitching wedge that hooked it 20 yards. And there he was wearing this white pink shirt, Travis Mathieu, that just put us. He put us on the market. Like he killed it for us. But we're doing this photo shoot one time, and fuck, this guy's high maintenance. Like he's trying to we're at my club. It's not men's only, but like he's got a female agent that's with him. And she's trying to go in the locker room. I'm like,
oh, yeah.
Bubba, you can't do this. What are you talking about? I can do whatever I want. I'm like, no, this is my club. This is not happening. Like, I'm sorry. Like, yeah. I know like what, how you normally roll, but this is not how it works here. I'm sorry. So, you know, we went back and forth. We had this great photo shoot. I'm standing there and there is this one picture that not many people know this, but there's this picture where I'm kind of standing there with a golf club and Bubba's the main guy. And there's like six of us back there looking at him. And I got this golf club on my hand and I got this middle finger running.
Yes. No way.
Running down the shaft right at him. And it's one of our main pictures of Travis Mathieu on the wall still.
Yes. Love that. Yes.
I don't know. I just saw him. I know who he's a nice guy. I saw some things from him that were totally opposite of what I thought he was. He mistreated like volunteers.
Yeah, that's where we have a beef with him.
And that was the part where I was like, man, dude, you're coming off as this big Christian guy, and
exactly
this whole facade that you got. And I'm like, hey, dude, I feel like I'm a better person than you, and you're coming off as this big Christian person. But he treats people like shit.
Yeah.
From what I saw.
Yeah.
Well, that time he went on 60 Minutes before the Masters, you know, 3-4 years ago, and they tried to make excuses for him about how he has anxiety around crowds and stuff, and that was the reason why he chewed out the caddy and stuff.
Who doesn't?
Me?
Yeah.
Who doesn't get anxiety? Around crowds.
I love crowds. Yeah,
I do too, but like when you're in the moment and you're playing golf, like.
Yeah, for sure.
And this is a way different subject, but it's like mental health. It's super hard for me to understand this side of a lot of these people that are coming out because that is actually part of the sport, is to understand the up and downs and the breakdowns and the low and the highs. Like that's actually why some of these great players are so great. They train their brains to be the great.
Yeah. I'll digress from Bell Ends. We need to come back because there's another couple of names we have to mention. But do you think, I personally think that these days golfers are being trained, college through into professional, are being trained to have no emotions, to not have the ups and downs and just be monotone. You know, just, would you agree with that?
This is the hardest part of my life. So I trained myself for 20 years to have zero emotions. And then when I retired, I have to be a dad and a family man. Mm-hmm. How am I supposed to have emotion with my kids, my wife? It was the hardest thing I've ever had to do. I actually had to go to therapy for it because I didn't know how to. Like I had to adapt to, like when something happens, I
expressing emotion.
100%.
Yeah.
And I'd never had it. Like, wow. Our goal in life in golf was to forget your last shot. Go to the next.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. You're only as good as your last shot. That's it. Go to the next. And now I'm like, I have to express myself to my family and my wife and my kids and like show them that I'm a person, you know, like with feelings.
What about that one, huh?
It's next level. Yeah. It's next level.
That really makes
it was the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. And it took me about a year.
Yeah. Because I would love to see more emotion. I'd love to see snap a club when you make a double bogey. Yeah. And just, you know, pull your pants
get
down.
Get excited when you win. I mean,
get excited.
Get excited about
it's
hitting.
It's so emotionless. It's like, oh, yeah. I'm dying here.
But look at the NFL now. They're penalizing you for that.
True.
So it's like, are you supposed to do it? Are you not? You know, no.
We're going to go back to Bear Lions of the Week. Zabo can't stand Bryson DeChambeau.
I don't mind him.
What do you think of him?
What's your thoughts on Bryson?
I don't mind Bryson. It's the same concept of as everybody else.
Yeah, amazing talent.
He's super selfish. He doesn't give a shit about anybody else. Mm-hmm. He does his own thing. All he's trying to do is win golf tournaments. And I applaud him for that. Is he missing out on some things as far as like life? Maybe, but maybe not. He does his own thing. He's Bryson. And a lot of these guys, this is 20% marketing for them. Mm-hmm. The way they're doing, the way they present themselves, what this whole deal about how they talk about speed and power and Instagram, this is dollars for them.
Yeah, it's all about money.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah.
Last one, Ian Poulter.
Oh, our favorite, Poulty.
Not a fan of Ian Poulter.
Yeah.
Zabo, you're not a fan.
Who is? Other than that one guy who emailed you.
That one dude. Well, Big Jack from season one. Yeah. He loves him. You like Ian Poulter? You ever?
Really hard no for me.
That's a hard no.
Yes.
No.
You got any Poulty stories?
Yeah, I got one. I got one.
It's called a leading question.
Yeah. I got a one. Okay. So BMW Championship 2009, I believe, at Cog Hill.
Chicago, yeah.
Yeah. So that's the third one. So there's only 50 players, I think. There's no cut.
Yeah.
All twosomes, the whole tournament. It's actually great. You play fast. Everyone's making money. It's like 60 grand in the last place.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
You're golden. You're like everyone should be happy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're on the fourth hole and this fucking guy.
You're playing with Poulter.
I'm playing with Poulter first two rounds. Because they pair you where you are in your standings.
Yeah.
And we were like
side by side.
I was like 51, he was 50 or something.
Yeah.
And then they repair you after Friday. So we're on the fourth hole and it just starts fucking pissing.
Yeah.
It's raining, thunder, and they always have vans out there for as far as if you need to get in the clubhouse, whatever the case is. Yeah.
Take shelter.
Yeah. So I'm with my golf coach, he's walking with me. And Poulter hit his shot. I hit my shot, horn blows. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go mark my ball. He's like, I'm going to leave my ball. So he leaves his ball. I go mark mine. I come back with my golf coach walking back. Fucker's gone.
I'm
like,
your mark's gone?
No. He's gone.
Oh, he's gone.
I'm like, the van's gone.
No way.
This asshole left me on the golf course, thunder and lightning, in pissing rain, no van.
Wow.
By the way, this is like an 8-seat van. Okay. Yeah. So
it's just him and his caddy riding.
So me and my golf coach, Jamie Mulligan, walked back from four all the way in the clubhouse. Is lightning going on? Like, I don't feel like I'm in danger, but like, it's just not something you want to do.
Yeah.
Get back to the clubhouse. And I'm not very confrontational. Like, I'm pretty easy to get along with. I get in the locker room. I wouldn't say like I was going to fight him, but it was really close. Like, I got back there. I was like, dude, you have got to be fucking kidding me.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to kind of, one of those movies where you like grab the throat and put him on the wall.
For sure.
That's where my head was.
Yeah.
Wow.
But, you know, I gave him a little talk, like a little more aggressive than normal. And I think he respected me out of it.
I think I think in all fairness to Poulter, though, it was an 8-seater. So there was one for him, one for his caddy, and then 6 for his ego. So
seems low. You know,
yeah, exactly. He had to leave half of it behind.
Anybody that needs a yellow Ferrari to tell him how good himself is.
I know. What do you think about that, this modern day with a dickhead like that? It's on Instagram just posting videos of how many cars he has. And
yeah, I mean, I can respect you for having it, but don't be posting that shit all over. Nobody needs to see that.
No, not interested.
Well, I mean, it all comes back to insecurity.
True.
I think about yourself and what you're trying to do in your life, and I don't know. Whatever. Like I said, everyone is selfish in golf. That's what they need to do. That's their deal.
So obviously you played your PGA Tour. What came... How did you lose your card?
I lost my card in, like, I think it was 2014-ish. I had a shoulder injury, labrum, and a capsule issue. So I did surgery, and it took me about 8 months for rehab. So I took the full year off. I came back, and I had 14 or 15 starts on my medical, and I just missed. So I went back down to the web.com tour, and I played 2 more years after that, which is great. I didn't get my card back, but, you know, that's just kind of how it goes in sports. It's a tough deal. And at that time, the sport was completely evolving. Everyone was starting hitting it. Everyone was 23 years old and hitting it 310 in the air. And I was at that time 37, 38, flying at 270. You know, it's just a different game.
Yeah.
And totally respect all these guys, that what they're doing and the technology and the, you know, all these guys have coaches, massage guys. They have putting coaches. They, you know, they're spending $300,000-$400,000 a year.
Yeah.
To keep their jobs. And I totally respect that. It's just a different game, you know. Mm-hmm. Can I go out and beat a tour player tomorrow? Absolutely, in one day.
Yeah.
Can I do it over a time? Probably not, you know.
So you don't feel like you could make a living on the PGA Tour currently? Or you have no interest in doing that, right?
I mean, right now I don't have interest in it. Do I think I can do it? I'm never going to say no to that, because I honestly do think I can do it.
Do you still love the game and play frequently?
Well, I love it way more now than I did.
Yeah.
You know, there was the hardest part about sports, just like any other sport, is the coming down on your career. It's like that black time of, what am I doing out here? I'm playing this web.com event in the middle of bumfuck Georgia, trying to make a cut for $2,000, like,
after, and I'm playing on the PGA Tour,
and I'm spending $3,000. That's when, like, your real mindset comes in. Is like, okay, do I need to keep doing this? Do I need to get a job? Do I need to? And that's where, for me, fortunately, when Travis Matthew had sold, it was a perfect split for me and golf. And that time, so I got to be with my family, be a dad, do all the things that, like, I kind of envisioned. As far as I get to coach my kids baseball now.
That's awesome.
I still play golf twice a week.
Oh, you do?
I never hit balls.
Yeah,
I hit 20 before I tee off, but I don't practice. But I still get to play twice a week. I'm a member of the club, Virginia Country Club in Long Beach.
The
guys are fantastic.
Patrick Cantlay plays out of there, doesn't he?
Patrick was there. Luke List, Max Homa, John Merrick, Peter Tomasello. Great crew. So
played 1 year on tour.
We found that out.
Where were you when you got the phone call about Travis Matthews getting sold?
Oh, this is epic story. This one actually doesn't get told too much.
Oh, nice.
I've only told this once.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right, let's hear it.
So I'm in, I'm playing a web.com event in Northern California, or Corn Ferry now, the KFC.
KFC tour.
Northern California, I can't remember, TPC.
Stonebrae.
Yes.
Yeah.
Stonebrae.
That's the one. Oh, yeah.
Stonebrae.
Don't go to the right side and look for your ball because of rattlesnakes. Okay, I might just leave that one.
Yeah, that one.
I've been there.
So it's the second round. I'm like even par. on like the 14th hole. Mm-hmm. And I'm checking my phone, and I never check my phone during competition ever. And I'm getting these, I'm just getting buzzed. And I'm like, I get this one text, and it was an actual article. Callaway has bought Travis Matthew for $125 million. And I'm like, my back hurts.
Did you know the math on that right away? Like what you'd be clearing?
Yeah.
So you knew the math on that.
And so
you're like, F you bitches, I'm out.
I knew it was coming, but I didn't know when.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And as soon as I saw that article and it was out, like,
wow.
I was
what a
like,
feeling.
I've never done this before, but I walked off the golf course. all the Travis Matthew boys were in Tahoe. So I rented a car and I drove to Tahoe.
That's awesome.
We just sent it for the night. Yeah. Casino cards. Just had a blast. It's just an epic story as far as like how it evolved with where it started. We started in a little shed, trying to make clothes, you know.
Yeah.
And it ended up, Callaway bought us for $125 million.
Blowing up.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
How many years are you away from the Champions Tour?
Seven.
Will you do it?
I honestly would love to.
Yeah.
If I need my family support.
Yeah.
If my boys are involved and if my wife is in, I will do it.
How old are your boys now?
They're 8 and 5.
8 and 5. So yeah.
So it's right around high school time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, they never really got to see golfer John Mellinger, you know, because they were so young and they never got like, oh yeah, like you were on TV. I was like, yeah, a couple times. Like I was pretty good. Like,
yeah.
And I, you know, they'd really like that, but I know what it takes to do that and the sacrifice and the selfishness. So if they want me to do it, then I will do it. Yes.
What advice would you give to young up-and-coming professionals right now from your experience?
Honestly, the biggest thing is like I was an underdog when it comes to like, you know, I was always a plus 220 guy. I was never a favorite. It's like, so just believe in yourself and what you're doing, and just it's a process. It's not going to happen in a day or a week or a month or a year. It could take years to see actual progression of your game, and you have to really evolve as a person, but you got to put yourself in that spot constantly. So like, I would say play as many tournaments as you can and try to fucking win them all. Put yourself in that spot. So my whole deal was, I want to try to figure out how to be comfortable when uncomfortable. If that makes sense. If there's an uncomfortable situation, I'm going to try to be as comfortable as possible.
So you want to put yourself in position to win, which makes you uncomfortable, but you want to be comfortable there.
Correct.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I get that.
The more you do that, the more you get better.
Yeah.
Like how uncomfortable, but how comfortable can you be uncomfortable? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do it every day. I have a 30-inch waist and I keep on trying to get a 36-inch trousers. If you could go back to when you were 21, would you change anything?
I wouldn't change a thing.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
No. I went through the whole thing. I went from mini tours up to playing majors with the best players in the world.
Yeah.
I got to 67 in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like not great, but to me,
it's unbelievable.
To me, it was amazing because I grew up in this small town in Escondido, San Diego. Like that just doesn't really happen. So I always thought like I was one of the best players. I was one of the top 100 players in the world.
Yeah.
That's insane. Yeah.
So
that's fantastic.
That part was pretty cool.
I think, you know, one of my big questions, was there any altercation that comes to mind between you and another player on tour, other than, you know, your incident with Pulte or other two players that really stuck out, like a physical altercation that you saw between tour players and or caddies?
I had a little incident with Brett Quigley.
Brett Quigley, a Rhode Island guy. I'm from Rhode Island.
Okay. Big Rhode Island guy. They Champions Tour guy now.
Yeah,
killing
is.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're on. We're playing Players Championship.
Okay. TPC.
And he's, you know, that's it, it's probably like 2012. So he's kind of he's struggling. It's like he's getting shorter. The tour's getting stronger.
Late 40s. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like trying to get to the Champions Tour, but it's not close enough. And, you know, golfers just get fucking grumpy. And I love fucking Brett forever. But we're on 16, right? And it's at par 5, and I'm sitting there, and he has this 25-footer, and I have like an 8-footer. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, I'm going to get ready. I'm going to fix all the ball marks.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it's my turn, I'm ready, you know? And apparently he was a little bit faster ready than I thought. He goes, hey, you finish your fucking gardening when it's your turn.
Wow.
And I'm like, all right, fair. I'm just trying to keep pace and play up, dude.
Wow. He was being serious.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he pulled me aside, and after the round, he's like, hey, dude, I'm so sorry about that. It was all good. But, you know, you're in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, you get
everyone.
Testy.
That's what people don't really know is you see golf on TV and you're like, man, this is like the greatest job ever. But these guys are grinding.
It's your living.
Their mind is on for 5 hours. You are trying to beat yourself constantly. And so, like, they do snap. And I totally appreciate all these guys. Like, they're so good, like on TV and their interviews and it's impressive, man.
They do say that Jack Nicklaus was the best because he could switch everything 30 seconds before a golf shot, and that was it. In and out, come in and out, and that, because you can't concentrate for 5 hours.
Well, you know, Jack never missed a 3-footer, right?
Never.
No, I just ask him. He's like, I never. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about. It's like Dabble.
Someone in an interview, he's like, what are the, I don't know what you're talking about.
No.
Yeah.
Don't remember that.
It yourself.
Don't remember
you
that.
You believe it never happened.
It's like myself with my wife. She said, remember you said that? And I'm like, no, don't remember that.
What are you talking about?
Same thing. What are you talking about? Yeah, exactly. You're crazy. You've gone crazy.
No, this is today. That was yesterday.
anything else, Dad Dabble?
I don't, but John, thank you. Thank you for coming
on. Yeah, thanks
for
coming in.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. You guys are doing a great job.
Thank you.
Please.
Don't you have a pub now?
I got a little pub down in Long Beach, Riley's.
Uh-huh. Riley's.
Riley's. My partner, his daughter's name is Riley.
Okay.
I bought it a couple years ago. It's pretty fun. Super mellow, low key.
Okay.
The whole deal, kitchen, bar.
So if you're down in Long Beach, California, jump into Riley's pub and just put everything in John's tab.
100%.
Yeah. John sent me.
Yeah, but
Mally sent me. Yeah.
Travis Matthews sent me.
100%. But first, you got to go glorify Donkey.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, listen, this is episode 82. We've had a previous 81. So if you're new to listening to this, go back and listen to the catalog. If you have any questions, obviously send them in. Check out Glorified Donkey on all the different social media platforms. I think going forward, we've got a couple of things coming up before Christmas, but until then, you know, Dabble, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
John, thanks again. So many more questions, actually.
Oh, God.
So, what's so funny is he'll say something, and you go, oh, well, okay, we could talk about that.
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you, guys. That was super fun. Unfortunately, I'm one of those guys that just has a lot of the stories on the tour.
Yeah. No, it's brilliant. And then what we'll do is we'll do this again. We'll come down and play golf with you as well down south. I want to go play that place.
For sure.
And yeah.
100%.
Listeners, many thanks for your support. Keep listening. Enjoy your golf, but more importantly, keep it humble.